Thank you, microdose.com. That's all I have to say right now. I have been traveling so much, planes, cars, like long, long drives. My body hurts, you know, sleeping in different beds, in different hotels, you know, everything's kind of screwy. And thank you, microdose.com. I know you've heard the word microdose before, but this is microdosing THC. And microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And you deserve to feel good. You can go to their website, microdose.com, and learn all about microdosing THC. But I'm telling you, it is amazing. They have all different strains that help with all different issues. A friend of mine just sent me a photo of her with her order from microdose.com saying thank you. I'm telling you, a lot of people do this, all sorts of people. And they do it to feel healthier. They do it to perform better. They do it to focus. They do it to sleep. They do it for pain. They do it for relaxation. It really helps your mind and body be at peace. So really check it out. Microdose.com is amazing. And the product, they taste delicious, number one. But the product is so damn good. And you deserve to feel better. So what are you going to do? You're going to go to microdose.com. If you don't already know, you're going to learn about microdosing THC. And when you get there, you're going to get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code Judy Gold. It is available nationwide. That is microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, for 30% off and free shipping. That is a lot, 30% off. And the stuff is amazing. I'm telling you, microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold. You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. Let's bring her out. The star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Hello, everyone. It's me, your lover, Judy Gold. Welcome to Kill Me Now. We have two very special guests today. Very, very special. And I know this is airing at the end of January. It is now, I think we're 8 days from fucking what the fuck is going to happen. So we don't know. I'm warning you right now. We don't know what happened at the inauguration. But I fucking hate, I want to kill, like, since it is Kill Me Now, Jim Jordan needs someone to pull his ears out of his head and someone to stick, like, a big dildo up his ass, okay, while he's being pinned down by a wrestler, okay. Donald Trump, I can't even. It's beyond. Ted Cruz, oof, needs a dick in his mouth and in his ass, and his fucking wife needs to watch him suck the dick.
Oh my God.
I hate them. I fucking hate them. So I just wanted to start with my Kill Me Now moment. But our guests today, you know, I had to get that out because you are the most loving, caring. Like, I mean, this is a feel good. This is going to be a feel good episode. And I am enraged. So thank you, Stephen Skeels and Jared Bortz are. I don't know how. Okay, so they're both incredibly talented, you know, musicians, actors, musical theater people, dancer, everything. Okay, they're really good looking. FYI, you'll see when we do the little clips. Okay, Steven has a fucking, I don't know what on his head, but
pebbles.
What is it?
Pebbles. Remember pebbles and Band-Aid?
Pebbles. Yeah, has a pebbles haircut. And they are a married couple who went through an incredible tragedy, and all they can think about is giving back. Now, that is what I call not Judy Gold. No, I'm kidding. that's what I call, as we, you know, this is the Jew Bell, by the way. I call that Tikkun Olam, and that is the Jewish value of repairing the world. And I feel like That is what our religion is based on. And these two guys embody Tikkun Olam. So thank you for being here. Thank you for bringing joy and the most incredible music to, first of all, so you have this album out. We're going to get to why and all that shit. But I want to just, I want people to get this album. Okay, so let's just start from the beginning. Steven is more of the behind the scenes writing every fucking song. And Jared is a performer. He was in Wicked for 12 years. 12?
Yeah, 12 plus, yeah.
12 plus. But let's start at the very beginning.
A very good place to start.
Okay, so can you tell everyone about the album and then we're going to go back to your childhoods. Go.
Yeah, so no, I love what you said about the give it back, and because it really was, you know, we were receiving so much help and it really is so much easier to give than receive. I don't know. There's a long tradition in Broadway. We raise money for everything.
I know.
And, you know, we fundraise, we have 2 6-week fundraising periods, which 12 weeks, I mean, that's a quarter of our year. That's a quarter of our year we spend fundraising, just that work.
Right.
And so we received so much support from so many people that we wanted to balance out the scales. And we actually felt like, oh gosh, this is so weird being on the receiving end. Let's get back to the giving. So that was the album was that. It was like, let's you know, gather a bunch of your songs, a bunch of, you know, the fanciest names we can get to help promote and sell an album. And let's try to make this thing. And so the first thing we did, I was like, you know, reach out to Lynn Pinto. She produces an album called Carols for a Cure every year.
Right.
And I've sung on it several years and she knows me, she knows Steven. And I said, at least just ask her for, you know, some advice, like where should we start? And Steven sat down to talk to her and she said, before you even say anything, I'm in, I'm on board, I'm going to fund the thing, we're going to do this. Now tell me what it is. And that was the amazing sort of start of this project.
And the name of the project is Thankful.
Thankful, an album for Jared Bortz.
And we'll get to why Jared and Steven are so thankful in a little while. But I want to say that I try to do as much research as possible. By the way, Steven, you are so fucking hard to find information on, FYI. Okay.
he's been hiding his lighter under a bushel for far too long.
Not anymore, bitch. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jared said something that is so important that we will bring back this theme later in the episode, that giving is so much easier than receiving. And I mean, that is so true. It's so much easier to be there for other people and be that person. And then when you need it, it's like, you don't want to take, I know it's just, but you guys, okay. First of all, we met at an equality benefit.
Yeah, a year ago, benefit. We were giving.
We're giving because that's all we do. That's all we do. Yeah,
it does. And, you
know, but see, I feel like actors and cabaret, you know, musical theater and cabaret people, I mean, the comics are the lowest on the totem pole, but you guys can relate to the fact that people think that we are so like, oh, will you do this for free? Because you're just a court jester. You just sing songs for a living. You just, you know, and it's like, fuck you. You wish you could do what I do for five fucking minutes. And does anyone ever ask you to, you know, do anything for free? But, you know, we're very sensitive people.
I know. Usually when people would ask me to sing, I was like, what do you do for a living? They're like, I don't know, tax preparer. I was like, yeah. Can you come over and do some taxes for me? And
I do that all the time. Yeah.
Is that something people ask you to do for free? Just
I know.
Like,
yeah,
oh,
can you look at this mole on my back? Thank you. You fucking asshole. Jared and Steven are married. Steven, where the fuck did you grow up?
Evansville, Indiana.
And my son went to IU, so I know a lot about Indiana. Not the most loving or tolerant area of the United States of America.
Basically Kentucky.
It's basically on the
right, yep.
Kentucky and Indiana. Very conservative views, I would say. A little redneck.
Did you grow up in a conservative family?
Not so much. I'm the youngest of 10 children.
What?
Youngest of 10. And my father passed when I was 9. And so my mother, and we were actually dirt poor. And my mother raised us all on her own. She was an incredible woman. Oh my God. my best friend and whom I adored, who we lost 9 years ago.
She
was very strong, 100-pound, 5-foot woman, but steel. I mean, had a heart of gold and a very strong woman. And I popped out, she said, musically. And from the time I was a baby, she said that music, that I would kind of change my whole way of being when I was 4 years old. And by 5, I was singing and harmonizing by 6 or 7. And I told her when I was 5 years old that I'm supposed to be in New York City because we were watching TV. And I said, that's where I'm supposed to be. She said, that's
And you're the youngest of fucking talent. The youngest is always the best. I'm telling you, the youngest is the most talented. And no one gives a shit about, huh? But I mean, you were the favorite. Absolutely. Are you the only gay of the 10 kids?
I have a brother who's bisexual, but never really came out. And he's very, very kind of a little, he was a little rednecky, but he had like an aneurysm and changed his personality completely. Made him
What happened? Is he a big queen now?
No, I can't wait for him to hear this. He'll love that.
I think the bisexual thing was always there, but he used to be like a bit of an asshole. And
he was a bit of an asshole. And also he was a little bit of a gigolo. He didn't care if you were a man or a woman, as long as you take care of him.
But
I don't ever want to work a day in my life. I want people to take care of him. And he kind of had that kind of a life.
What number is he?
He's number Elaine, Linda, Ricky, Alan, Debbie, Randy, Ronnie. He's number 6. Number 6.
Wow. And you didn't have your own room, I'm assuming.
Oh, we lived in literally a rundown shack that the ceiling was caving in.
Right.
And only one little tiny heater in the entire house. 1 year we didn't have heat at all because we were so poor. And
2-bedroom?
2-bedroom. And like 10 people in the little tiny, tiny house. I don't even know what square footage would be. It was so small.
Very small. You woke up with snow on your face?
We woke up with snow because there was a huge hole in the roof.
Oh,
and
then I woke up with
snow coming on my face and, you know.
And so did you, and for like, you went to school, I'm assuming, even though you were freezing. Were you good in school? Did you have like a normal school life, even though you were like, basically? You know,
I think being the youngest, I saw that so many of my siblings were made fun of because we were so poor.
Right.
Skills, white trash, cooties, that kind of thing. But at a very early age, I was very funny. I was very funny. And I realized, as you know, that funny people will like you if you're funny. And then I would dance and be silly. And so I made a really conscious decision early on, like, I'm going to be liked. And I was actually really popular all through school.
Okay, Steven.
Because I think it was really calculated on my part to try to be liked.
You know? But it's good that you're that smart. So were you like involved in like, the musical theater? Were you gay? I mean,
at age 7, the movie Funny Girl came out, and my mom, we got a little bit of money, and she took me and my sister. And when I was also very little, when I was 7, I looked about 3 or 4. I was very tiny for a long time.
Right.
And I saw it, and Barbara Streisand came on screen, and it literally changed my life. And I knew in that moment that I would be in show business. I swear to you. And I came home.
And she, you know, that's so funny. Because
she's really open. My dream is, my bucket list is to write a song and produce a song for her. And it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. But here's the thing. You know, as a Jewish girl from New Jersey, she was like, it's funny that she reaches out to you, this like gay, poor family living in a shack. And to me, she's also the dream. Like, here's this seemingly, you know, she's considered unattractive, but she's fucking, go fuck yourself. Gorgeous. I'm not changing who I am.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Absolutely. And gorgeous. Yeah. All right. So we have that in common. That's great. And you knew you were a gay, but you just didn't deal with it.
I just knew I was really strange. I was a really strange child. I really was. And my teacher, I also used to write backwards when you're first learning cursive.
Yeah.
And she would come to my desk and I would be literally writing cursive backwards. I think she thought I was a witch. She said it one time. We got this little redhead because I was a flaming redhead
and left-handed.
And I wrote backwards. And when I would have to write on the chalkboard and she had you up in front of the classroom, I would write with my right hand. So I was always switching. I was just strange. My desk had to be turned different from everyone else for me to write a certain way. I was a very
God, I love you.
An oddball. I really was.
Did you play the drums?
I didn't.
Because, you know, that's like the people who can do the left and the right independently to me are the best percussionists, you know, but you're a piano player. So it's the same thing. All right. Anyway.
I love our new sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. It is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers, of which I am one of them. They have everything you want, really, seriously, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. And I know you're thinking, Judy, you live in an apartment. in New York City. What's with the fast-growing trees? Well, let me tell you something. You don't need to have a yard or a lot of space. You can grow lemon, avocado, olive, or fig trees inside your home. And guess what I have? A fig tree in my office, and I fucking love it. I love it. Hi, Avi. His name is Avi. And I love him, and he brightens up. It makes me so happy. And I talk to him. Okay, I know I'm going overboard, but having plant life in your house is so comforting. And I love fast-growing trees. Thank you for this beautiful fig tree. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. They offer free plant consultation forever. Okay. And I just got a new pot for Avi. So I'm going to be calling them and asking them the correct way to put it in there. You will find the perfect thing for your climate, for your space, for your aesthetic needs. It's great. I love it. I have a plant and it's so, I'm telling you, it has made me much happier. And you know how happy I am. Anyway, this spring, which is, you know, spring is, it is the growing season. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online. Up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
Jared, let me just tell you what I know about Jared, since there is shit about him. Okay, I got to listen to an he's not Steven hiding in the fucking, you know, bunker. Okay. You were very close to your grandmothers. And that to me, my grandmother, also my savior. But I love that you had that sort of person in your life who was, you know, like you were accepted by your, now you say, Gladys was your mother's mother, right? And yeah. Eileen was your mom. It was your, dad's mom.
Yeah. You know, I never had one of these interviews where somebody starts the interview knowing things about me. So I'm already sort of like, I feel like I'm a fancy person for some reason. Oh,
well, I love doing research because my podcast is called Kill Me Now. Cause that's what I say every fuck. Cause everything annoys me, but I believe everyone has a story and I just love to know what makes people tick and who they are. And I listened to this interview you had and I was, and it's just the having one fucking person, that's all you need to say, you know, you're normal. You're okay. I don't see anything. So, and I love that. So your grandmother took you to the grease paint players. Is that correct?
Well, that was, there was an article, there was a little thing in the paper, auditions for the grease paint players.
Right.
Or a children's theater production of Jack and the Beanstalk. And she goes, honey, I think you'd like this. And so I went and I played a bean and a townsperson and she couldn't have been more right. I just like a pig in shit. I just loved it, you know, because before that I just did all the prerequisite, like, you know, you shuffled a choir with all the kids, you shuffled.
Right.
That was the first time it was sort of like choosing it outside of what was just sort of, you know, obligatory. So yeah, that really was the start. I think it was 13 maybe.
So before that, tell me about your family. Like, just seems like a normal.
Yeah. I mean, we're very yin and yang. Steve,
right.
Very normal. I'm the youngest of three boys. Again, the youngest. And grew up in Western Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Latrobe, Pennsylvania, the home of Rolling Rock Beer, Arnold Palmer, and Mr. Rogers. My parents, you know, worked super freaking hard. I was just saying the other day to my brother, it was like, the reason we're so like self-sufficient and because we never knew you could hire people to do things.
Right.
You know, my dad, they would do everything. And you know, anytime my dad got stuck doing something, he called Buddy who knew slightly more than he did.
Right, right, right.
You know, they were hardworking, good folks. And I super, super, lucky in that way that when I met Steven, I was a blank page. I was uninhibited or unhindered by bad things. And he was the complete opposite. He was full of, you know, a life of things that had sort of scarred him and written upon him. And so I remember the first time he sort of shared his background, we were driving home from a New Year's Eve party in Nashville, Tennessee, back to New York.
Right.
And he started telling me about
All right, go ahead. We'll deal with that.
His best friend.
My best friend lives there.
But who drives? Go ahead.
Yeah. And we were, and he was started telling me a story. And I literally said, you know what? I'm going to need you to pull the car over. Because up until that point, the story of his life was something that only existed in after TV school specials.
Right.
After school specials. And it at that point was the first time it hit me that people go through some really dark shit in their lives. And it never was real for me. And so that, yeah, I mean, I was lucky, had a super easy, lovely, caring, loving, provided for upbringing.
And it's amazing how you get attracted to those kinds of people.
Right. Totally fascinated. I was like, what happened next? Then what? You know, it just, it all seemed like a crazy movie.
And I was drawn to his just even keel, idyllic childhood. I couldn't hardly, for him, as strange it was for him to hear about my life, it was strange for me to hear about his life.
Did you feel like when you guys first met and you were talking about your upbringings and stuff, did you feel resentment, Stephen? Like that?
No, I did. I felt in awe of someone that had that kind of a life, really honestly, because for so long I hid so many things. My father also was paranoid schizophrenic. So before he died, from the time they had me, number 10, my dad was in and out of mental institutions. So, and when he was around my mom, he was very violent and an alcoholic. So it was I popped out into like drama land. You know what I mean? Life was so, his mom and dad still love, adore each other. They still kind of laugh.
I know.
I couldn't imagine what that was like.
And Jared, I think that's the anomaly. I mean, honestly, you are, that, and the fact that you become, it's so funny because you think all performers, I know for comics, there's very few comics who are like, I had the happy-go-lucky childhood, you know? And I feel like that's generally the way it is with performers, except for like, you know, the popular singer girls who are probably like, you know, whatever. It's so, because when everyone finds out, you know, what happens to you guys, it makes so much sense to me now that you were sent to him. You were sent to, Stephen was sent to Jared because, I mean, what you've seen in your life is so incredibly dark, and you're the perfect person to deal with the darkness that unfortunately hit you guys a couple of years ago. It's so beautiful the way, I mean, I hate being like really positive, but it is sometimes the way the universe works, isn't it? It's my brand.
Certainly curious.
Yeah. But I do have this other nice side of me. All right. So you grew up in Western Pennsylvania. You love your grandma. You love Golden Girls. You used to watch Girls with your grandmother.
Brown paper bag, go to grandma's house. We go and play bingo at the fire hall.
Right.
And then we go and watch Golden Girls. I'd sleep in the rollaway bed in her, you know, in her bedroom. The best.
And you were popular and you were friends with girls.
You know what? That's a strange thing. I was popular. I was on student council, but I could not have felt more like an outsider and like an alien on the inside. I think on the outside, people are like, "Oh, it's Jared." I think on the inside, if they only knew how
the torture
I felt.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't see what I felt on the inside reflected anywhere around me.
I know. Representation is so fucking important.
So important.
Absolutely.
And it's so interesting that we, you know, like as a gay, you know, we grow up innately knowing, well, our generation, or you're a little younger than me, but okay, Stephen, I think you're still younger than me.
I don't know.
He has a big birthday coming
up. No, baby, you're younger than me. I'll be 60 next month.
Oh, happy birthday. You're so much older than me, 2 years. All right. You look good. What the fuck? I hate you.
That's,
all right.
That's what the height. It's pulling me back. That's what the
ponytail. Yeah, that's what.
Pulls me back.
But, you know, and the thing about the being friends with girls, I mean, I love that because.
Oh, yeah. Boys scared me. I didn't know what to do with boys. I didn't understand. I just didn't get it. I didn't know how to relate to boys. Right. I was like, girls, adults, anything except my peers that were also male, male identifying, you know, whatever the terms we use now, that gender is a spectrum and not just binary.
Of course now they do that.
Yeah. The girls were safe. It was like, oh, this feels safe.
And I fucking hated the girls because they were so fucking nasty. Anyway. All right. Just quick question before we get to you going to your dance class. Someone brought you to a dance class, Jared, right? Yeah. Your friend said, yeah, wanting to come to dance class.
Bring a friend to dance class day. Yeah.
And that was it for you. You were,
well, yeah. I mean, there was something about the discipline, the absoluteness of it in ballet. You're either doing it right or you're not. There's really not room for interpretation. You know, a tendu is a tendu, an arabesque is an arabesque. And there's something about that absoluteness that just immediately appealed to me. I was like, ooh, this, I can do this. There's no gray area. You're either doing it or you're not. And I'm a very physical person. I like working hard. You know, everything about it. It was artistic. I mean, everything about it appealed to me.
It's like classical, you know, I studied, you know, music in college too, and it's the classical, you know, like this is the piece. This is how it was meant to be played. And first of all, I feel like you can't do, like, you need that basic training to do anything, you know? So you go to this ballet class and you're like, oh my God, I love this. And is anyone at school like, Jared's a faggot?
Oh no, nobody knew I went to dance class. Yeah, all right, good. No, I mean, look, there was the occasional, like, walking down a pretty empty hallway and the guys might go, right, you're a faggot. Yeah. You know, that was the worst it got for me, thankfully. Right. It was just a very sort of subtle thing. Otherwise, you know, I didn't deal with too much, you know, bullying and that kind of stuff. So yeah, no, people didn't know that I danced with ballet. The thing I was embarrassed about is I started at age 15. I started working full time at the local theme park as an entertainer.
Yes.
Was against all child labor laws, but that was the embarrassment, because it was the school picnic day where the whole school was going to be at the theme park. And there's me doing shows. Just, I couldn't, that was a thing that, so the ballet, I didn't have to deal with that. That could be my own little thing that I could explore and do, because it was in the big town of Greensburg, you know, and I went to school in Latrobe. So there was no crossover there, thankfully.
Right. So did you guys have gay, you know, experiences when you were in high school?
No, when my friends talk about these things, I'm like, you did what? I mean, I was so scared of my own shadow.
Right.
I remember, you know, thinking to myself, was like, when I'd lay in my bed, it was like, if there was a naked girl and a naked boy in front of me, which one would I choose? Which one, you know, and I would always so torture myself with this question. So the idea of actually having a gay
that
experience.
That is what you said to each to yourself? Oh my God.
I had a girlfriend and we were having sex.
I had a girlfriend.
Ew, did you like it?
I liked the feeling, you know what I mean?
I
knew I was attracted to men as well, boys.
Right. I don't know how guys, you know, because women can fake it, but like guys really can't fake it.
Guys are like, though, if you.
But I wasn't faking it. I wasn't faking it. I feel the same way too.
No, I really cared about her, and she was sweet, and we had time together.
And sex feels
good.
We
both love fashion, and which should have been a thing. We both were obsessed with GQ and Vogue in high school, and she made hats. She wanted to be a fashion designer at the time.
Right.
Made me clothes, and we were just.
Straight. Oh, that's cute. You get into Penn State for engineering. Is that right?
Well, that was very much my mother, and probably appealing to the practical side of my brain, that I had said to myself, you know, Carnegie Mellon University has a great theater program. And I made this arbitrary decision that if I get into CMU, it means I'm good enough and I can pursue this for a living. If I don't get in, well, I got accepted to Penn State for engineering.
Right.
And lo and behold, I don't get into CMU. And, you know, and that was the biggest learning lesson of all is, you know, because this business, little did I know, was going to be full of tons of rejection.
Oh, yeah.
And if I was going to be discouraged by my very first rejection, then I probably shouldn't have done it for a living.
Right.
But it immediately, I just sort of dismissed it. I was like, no, I still want to do this. So I'm going to figure out another option. And so that's when I applied at Ithaca College and auditioned there and got into their program, which is an amazing program as well. And is exactly where I should have been. I should not.
Right. See, the universe.
Yes. Provides.
Right. And so, so you go to Ithaca, and are your parents like,
well, I was the first kid to like go away to school. My brothers went locally.
Right.
You know, they started off at community college, you know, mostly for frugal reasons. You're like, let me get my prereqs out of the way. Then I'll go to the local state college. So me going out of state into a private college, I mean, when I got accepted and they got the bill, my parents, they were like, they sat me down. They're like, I'm so sorry. We can't afford this.
Right.
And that was their knee jerk reaction. But they knew, you know, being the amazing people they are, they figured it out. They found a way to pay for it. So when they dropped me off at school, it was the first time they're, you know, they had a child really sort of
right.
really flying the nest. You know, the, right. I wasn't going to show up on weekends with my laundry and asking for food.
Right.
I was really gone.
You and know? You were excited. You were happy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, excited, scared. You know, my senior year and my of high school and then into my freshman year is my only time, other than one other time, that I had panic attacks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was such a huge transition.
Yep.
So I was, you know, I was excited and scared. A little into the woods for you there. I was both, for sure.
So you get to college and you're in this program and you probably felt like, oh, hello.
Hello, meaning dinging the gay bell, or hello?
This is where I belong. This is what I meant. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it was, I'm such a sponge. I love to learn. And my only training up to that point was dance class. And I took a couple voice lessons with a local teacher who was great. And I did shows. So,
right,
you know,
right.
it's an acting conservatory I'm going to.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you know, your first 2 years, they hardly let you say any lines. They're just like breathing and moaning and massaging and rolling.
My God.
And,
yeah, you know, and, a lot of those and, classes. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I loved every second of it, but highly confused most of the time.
Right. Right.
Just jumping in feet first, like, great. Let's what is that? I don't know what that is. I'm going to do
and
it.
And you probably met so many kids from completely different backgrounds that.
Oh. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All right. What? All right. Just, this is just a selfish question. When did you guys meet your first Jew?
You know, here's the thing. I didn't understand what Jewish meant. I didn't understand what it meant. I remember once like trying to be real macho and saying something to my brother, like, oh, you're such a Jew boy. And
right.
Because I had heard somebody say it somewhere.
Right, right.
Honestly, I didn't know whether like was Jewish. Was it a culture? Was it a race?
Right.
Was it a religion?
Right.
So yeah, I couldn't even tell you when I finally like rapped because I had that naive upbringing.
Me too. I don't recall. I don't ever remember.
And then, but then you're moved to a city with all Jews. Jew.
In an industry full.
Right.
Jewish,
so did you, I mean, if you loved Funny Girl, you must have known. You know.
Well, I remember my mom talking to me about, yes, her being Jewish. And I just knew I was in love with her. You know what I mean? I was just in love
right,
with her.
Right, right, right.
And but when, as I got older, though, in college years, whatever, I was always attracted to the Jewish men. Absolutely. I like a nice
Schnozzeroni.
Yeah. It's
and the dark hair.
The dark hair. And
yeah.
I find it incredibly sexy.
It's just, I just love that. I just want to know because, like, you know, I'm a Jew. I grew up around Jews. And I know people who never met a Jew. And to me, that's like, how could you never meet it just because I grew up around them? So, yeah, it's just fascinating. And then do you carry a prejudice? Or are you just like curious? Like, I wonder where.
Right.
It really depends on your parents. And if they say negative shit, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, mine never said negative shit, but they also said never positive shit or. You know,
right, right. Nothing. They said nothing. Right. So, Stephen, where'd you go to school? College, not that I can find.
I did 1 year of a local college, but during that year, I was getting some work professionally, and
right.
I was very often. And I knew it wasn't for me. I just wanted to
right.
work. And
right.
then I did a theme park that summer, and then was offered a scholarship for Cincinnati Conservatory.
Right.
But I didn't go. I was too scared, to be honest with you. I was too,
really.
I really was terrified.
Do you regret that?
You know what? Sometimes I regret it because I think it would have given me a foundation of confidence. I think
right.
that I was seeing, I learned everything by watching and that poverty mentality. I didn't
right.
feel like I was worthy of having a scholarship of that. And I was terrified. So I didn't do it.
And you would have met more Jews. Ning, ning. All right. So you then graduate.
Yeah. What I love, he was talking before about how he sort of develop this persona to protect himself from being, you know, picked on for being, and
right.
so much so he was so good at it that when he got to college and he was rushing for a fraternity.
Oh,
tell about that.
Oh yeah, I think to counterbalance, I got a job really early working at a jewelry store, and all my money, like I said, I love fashion, so I would buy nice clothes, and
right.
so when I tried to pledge a fraternity. The one that I wanted to get into, they didn't want me because they thought I was too wealthy. See, because the way I was
wow.
dressed, I'm dirt poor, but I, and they're like, what do you mean you're dirt poor? I said, I just do this because I love clothes and I want the nicer things. I grew up
right.
in nothing. So I want nice things in life. So it was a strange thing. That
did you get into the fraternity?
Yeah, I did.
Did you get, what do they call that? My rushed and hazed.
Rushed.
And, yeah.
But they hazed and rushed a lot of people. But for me, I don't know. I think once again, I was kooky and I made people laugh. Right. And I was singing already.
The
and
laughter thing, I'm telling you, such a weapon.
Easy, yeah. Reason. It was really easy.
Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration. That it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lova, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
Okay, so you both then moved to New York City, correct?
Yep. Me right after college.
No, I did. Went all around. We're 18 and a half years apart, age-wise difference.
And 8 and a half?
18 and a half.
18 and a half. Wow.
18 and a half years older. Yeah. And so I did cruise ship and I sang at old nursing homes for years. I did a lot of musical theater stuff around the country.
Right.
I did a show. And you
met a lot of working performers. Did you meet other Broadway people or
along the journey. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, I always wanted to come to New York, but I didn't actually move to New York until I was 28. I was living in Los Angeles. I moved there. I was getting work there. And then I had a job in Europe. And after Europe, I finally had the confidence to come after I did a show in Germany to come to New York.
Oh, Germany. I love Germany. What a great area for the Jews. Okay.
Steven's being very, very modest. He opened Starlight Express.
I read that.
So he just is nonchalantly saying, I went to Europe to do a job.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell you something. My parents, God rest their souls, went over to Europe. They would travel after we all left the house and everything. And they loved to travel. And they went away. And I will never forget this. They came home. They went to see Starlight Express. Was it in London or?
I did the German company, which was the international company.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
They were in Europe. They went to see it and they loved it. They're like, it's going to be a big hit. And they got me a t-shirt from Starlight Express.
Really?
And I bet they saw you.
No, life is crazy.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, thanks. 1988.
Yep. That's right, bitches. Isn't that right, Greg? Okay, so then you moved to New York at 28. You're 10, Jared, when Stephen.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, that's great. That's really helpful. So, Stephen, you start, you're working. You were a nanny, I read, and you love kids.
I adore kids. And the person who I was a nanny to, I started when she was, what, how many weeks old?
Like 3 months, maybe?
3 months old, and now she's seven, but they moved during the pandemic to Florida. And her name is Georgia, but I call her Peachy. And she is like my daughter. I really, I can't stand being away from her.
I love that. I love that. I love men who love kids.
And my mother adored kids as well.
Okay. So, and then Jared, you moved to New York right after.
Yeah. You know, I was honestly, I graduated college. I worked a summer stock job, which I had done for the past couple summers. And it wasn't until the end of the summer that I was like, oh, right. I probably have to move to New York. So I remember asking just around the cast, being like, guys, I need to move to New York. Like, what do I do? And my friend Randy and Laura were like, you know, you can sleep. You know, Randy has a futon in his bedroom. Just
Are they Jewish, Randy or Laura?
No.
Oh, fuck.
No, I don't know. Laura Dzarchek. I don't know. I don't think. I'm not. I don't.
No, she's not. Go. It's just for bell purposes.
No, I know. I want you to ring that bell as much as possible.
Yeah.
I moved to Brooklyn, Park Slope, probably like September 6, 2001.
Right.
Right before September 11th.
Yeah, that's a great time to move. Yeah.
Great time to move to New York. So my parents, once again, you know, I was the first kid to move that far away from home. They brought me in our big old van with a bunch of crates of crap and dropped me off in Brooklyn. You know, mom cried, dad comforted her, and away they went. So yeah, so Brooklyn, Park Slope was my first.
I can't even imagine that phone call 5 days later. What are you doing?
it would be nighttime. She's like, what are you doing outside? It's dark out. You shouldn't be out in the dark.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah, you always yell at me for being outside in the dark.
So you auditioned for Lion King.
Look, I didn't care. I would go to every audition, no matter how obviously inappropriate the audition was for me.
Right.
And it really was one of my proudest moments when I think I'd auditioned for Lion King a couple times. And finally they were like, let's just throw this kid a bone. Let's give him a call back at least. Like clearly we're not past him. And I remember being so excited that I got a call back for Lion King. And that's all the further it went. But that's the type of person I was and the way I was going at this business. It was like, let's put everything against the wall and see what.
Isn't it just amazing that now you can't move to New York and be a starving artist? You can't, you know, I mean, it might change now with the fucking pandemic, but because there was the roaring 20s after, you know, but it, I moved to New York and I was a starving, you know, artist. I mean, I was starving because I have a big appetite, but no, I was like, you know, I didn't have money, but you didn't need it. It's like, it was a place for artists to come. And now I feel like we've lost that. I mean, and that work ethic of like, I got to keep trying. And now these kids, they just do a fucking TikTok video and they think that, you know, oh, it's so fucking annoying. But
well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know if you run into this at your echelon of your career, but you know, you show up to auditions now and they write down your Instagram thought.
Right now.
How many followers you have.
Like, so fucking ridiculous.
Like, this is the prerequisite for whether they're interested in hearing you or not.
Yeah, that's the, believe me, it happens with the comedians all the time. All right. So you're both working. How do you guys meet? First of all, when did you get your equity cards?
I got my equity card in the San Bernardino Civic Light Opera outside of LA in 1985, I think.
Nice.
Yes.
Wow. Were you even born yet? All right.
Yeah,
he was like six.
I was
79. He was six. He was six.
You were six when he was getting his. Just FYI, just wanted to rub that one in. Go ahead, Jared.
I got my equity card from my. I've been offered it a couple times, but you know, being the ever practical person, every time I was offered it, I was like, you know what? I don't know if I'm ready.
Right.
So I would accept the job. I worked at North Shore Music Theater doing Miss Saigon. They offered me an equity contract. I was like, you know what? I want to be treated just like the equity people, but I would rather do the non-union contract. So I did that. And then the next job I did was where we met. It was in Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
By the name of Eric Sean Fogel was from the area and was for the first year taking over the big annual holiday show. And he was going to direct it and choreograph it. And so we hired some dancers and singers out of New York. And I was one of those dancer singers hired out of New York. And he knew Stephen from cruise ship work. Stephen was a part of a quartet that did concert work.
Right.
And around. So we hired Stephen and this quartet of singers to be the main vocalist, and then hired some dancers out of New York. And so where we met was in Charleston, South Carolina, doing that short, like maybe what, 6 week job?
No, it was about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Short. Mm-hmm.
And was it love at first sight?
He courted me.
Well, you did? So yeah, Jared, you like the older gentleman?
Apparently, because I was too young to know what I liked. You know, I had a couple of boyfriends, you know, only one of significance.
Right.
And really the idea of flirting, I was awful at it, you know?
Right.
We went to go sing at a children's hospital one day on a break. But no, but like, again, that's what theater people do. We're like, what can we do for free today?
yeah, exactly.
And Stephen, as he does, made his bevy of 20 standard jokes, and I laughed at all of them. And that sort of started our little like flirtatious relationship.
First move.
Well, he called me and invited me to come over to his hotel room.
Only because one of the other girls in the cast was like, look, you know, I'm attracted to one of the older female singers. And you know, you think Stephen's, you know, and so we should just call them and just, you know, we're the young ones. Right. I was like, what am I supposed to say? She's like, just call them and say, I'm up late doing laundry. Do you want to hang out? And so I really did it just as a pact with her, because she was going to call the girl she was attracted to.
Right.
So I called Steve and was like, I'm up late doing laundry. You want to hang out? And he said no.
Good one, Steven. I'm
reading a book. And he's like, what do you mean you're reading a book? I'm like, I don't know.
And I said, you said you're an insomniac. You never
I was reading anything. The Art of Happiness.
Oh, nice.
and so then I just got like annoyed that he said no. And I was like, what? Just come over. And that was really sort of like the beginning of us, you know.
So I'm assuming you went over, Stephen.
I did go over.
He did go over. Folded laundry and other things.
Okay. I bet you folded. Okay. So do you know then that, oh my God, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this person?
No.
Both of us were sort of like, that was cute. That was fun. But I do remember saying to him, I was like, you know what? This has been so nice. I think I'm going to have to call you and wish you Merry Christmas, because the job was ending right before Christmas.
Right.
So we went our separate ways. You know, I was just moving to New York. I broke up with like a long-term relationship that I had during college. And I really had no designs on a relationship at all.
I'd been single for 10 years. I was done with relationships.
Right.
Happily so.
Well, you were already 75 years old at that point. Okay. So you get back.
That holiday conversation that he was like, you know what, if you were really adventurous, you'd rent a car and you'd come down to Nashville to my friend who's having a New Year's Eve party. And I said, maybe I will. I hung up the phone and I realized you had to be 25 to rent a car. And I was only 22.
Too young to rent a car.
I remember that from when I was doing stand-up. I was like, fuck, I can't go.
So my oldest brother, who had recently broke up with his girlfriend, was like, hey, what are you doing for New Year's? You know, you have any friends having parties? I was like, well, not really anything too exciting. But I said, you know, this guy I met invited me down to Nashville. His friend's having a party. He's like, okay, let's go. So it was my oldest brother, Ryan, who he and I copped in a car and drove to Nashville with no real plan of like where we were sleeping.
Right, right, right.
We just drove.
Did you know? Because now we're talking no cell phones, correct?
Correct.
Well, I had a cell phone because I was a grown-up. He did not.
I did not have a cell phone.
Yeah, because we didn't grow up with them and you don't fucking need them. Okay.
I didn't grow up with them. It was 2001. I had just gotten one my like senior college.
Okay, so did you call him and let him, did you call Stephen and tell him I'm coming?
Well, yeah, I said, you look, my brother's like, let's go on an adventure. And he's like, okay. And I remember driving up, we like met them.
And you
like,
got the address, right, I'm assuming.
We met like a parking lot somewhere in Nashville. Like, we didn't.
And my best friend, are you crazy? You invited this guy and he knew me. I'm like, he's like, what are you going to do? Is he going to stay all night? I'm like, I don't know. He's just coming to a party.
Was this a gay party?
No, it was mixed. It was
I was worried about Ryan, you know, because I went. Ryan had someone to fuck
basket.
No, Ryan was a brother. He lived in Columbus, Ohio for a small time.
Right.
And I remember him, you know, before I came out, him confiding to me when we saw a car. He's like, see that bumper sticker, brother, on that car? It was a rainbow flag. He's like, that means they're gay. And of course, me just knowing I was gay, but not, I was like, really? Is that what that means? but since then, you know, I had come out, and my brothers were very supportive. So yeah, so it was, you know, it was a very small party. It was just that, like, a house party with a few friends, some musicians, some
And is that when you knew?
We actually, we see pictures from that weekend, and we look like we've been in love forever. You know what I mean?
Oh.
It felt really comfortable. And then when we started driving back and I told him my life story, and he was like, oh my God, I'm going to have a, you know, heart attack.
Right.
Pull over. But then—
Wait, where was Ryan during the life story thing?
Well, no, so somewhere around like 1:30 in the morning, my brother was like, you know, but I'm kind of done here. I think I'm going to drive home to DC. Are you good to stay here?
Nice.
And I was like, I think so. So Ryan just drove back to DC, left me there. And we had discussed renting a car and driving back to New York together. And that's what we did. That's when that overwhelmed pull over the car, your life is nuts moment happened. And then we go back to New York, and I had a little another mini meltdown because I was overwhelmed being back in New York. And I remember saying to Steven, you know, I thought I was going to break his heart. I was like, you know, I'm really not looking for a relationship right now. So
I laughed. I mean, I'm good. I'm
yeah,
good.
Because you know, you're 18 years older than him.
Exactly, basically.
But then we just kept hanging out. Like, we just literally every day we're like, what are you doing? And so it was a very natural evolution of like, I just like being around you.
Right.
Let's keep.
See, that's a mature relationship. That's a mature way of.
And he is very. I mean, he's like an old grandpa. You know what I mean? And I'm like an immature child. So I think that's why.
Not immature.
Oh, that's so. I'm like that too. I'm very childish. I think being childish is very important. Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Steven Skeels and Jared Bortz. If you enjoy my podcast, which, I mean, how can you not? Please subscribe. Please leave a review, because that way more people find this amazing podcast. And also, I won't feel insecure that everyone else has like way more reviews than I do. Okay? 5 stars only, please. I'll say it again and again and again. If you haven't purchased my book, yes, I can say that. When they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble. There is something wrong with you that you listen to my podcast and do not read my book. Or get the audiobook, because the audiobook is just me reciting the book. And it was also featured in the New York Times book review. So it's got to be good. Anyway, it really would mean a lot to me. And I hope everyone is feeling great, because we have a new president, a new president, a new president. Yeah. And vice president. So it's been an amazing week. I'm sure it'll all turn to shit soon. But, you know, listen, I'm a little bit happy. A little bit. So check out my, what's it called? My website, judygold.com. Also, follow me on Twitter and Instagram for all upcoming. I have some virtual shows and live events. On Monday night, I am doing Monday, which is the 20th, whatever the fuck. Oh, it's the 1st, February 1st. I'm doing a show on Flappers. Flappers, that's the name of a comedy club. Can you fucking believe it? And it's online, so that's going to be a lot of fun with Lori Kilmartin, who was a guest on the show and is brilliant. The Jackie and Lori Show. So I'll be doing that. And just check me out at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. You know, like Jew Gold, because I'm Jewish. Anyway, I can't thank you enough for listening. Things are, you know, looking up, baby. And I hope you all have a fantastic week. Thank you so much. And as we always say, so long.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
It's Just Kill Me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
Now.
No, Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me Now.